Welcome everyone to the Split Screen Podcast, the official podcast of BlankPageBeatdown.com. My name is Shah Shahid, and this is usually the podcast where we compare film remakes with their source material. However, this episode is going to be something a little bit different. It's going to be a straight-up movie review of the much-delayed and long-awaited Padmavat, formerly known as Padmavati. The movie itself is an adaptation of a poem by Malik Muhammad Jayasi way back in 1540. For more details on what this movie is about, the historical context, the setting, check out episode 6 of the Split Screen Podcast with guest Samarpita Dutta. She recounts her first-hand experience hearing about the legend of Rani Padmavati during her visit to India. The movie stars Deepika Padukone, Ranveer Singh, and Shahid Kapoor, written by Prakash Kapadia and Sanjay Leela Bhansali, directed by Bhansali himself. And just letting everyone know that there is a lot of things to discuss with this movie before the movie's even out. It's been 2 years of controversy, scandals, a lot of issues, religious, social. So we're going to try to avoid that sort of discussion because I feel like it's already been done many times. It's been covered to death. If you've been following the movie, you already know everything about it. If you haven't, other people have covered it a lot more extensively. For example, like the other Bollywood podcast, Bollywood is for Lovers. Check out episode 53, Controversy Loves Bollywood, where they do kind of an update recounting of the controversy leading up to the release of the movie. And without any further ado, let's get into the movie review for Padmavat with our fan favorite, Kathy Gibson.
Hello.
Hey, welcome back, Kathy.
Thanks for having me back.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, well, not, I mean, maybe like, my New Year was kind of like, hey, I'm here. So, but yeah, I think, yeah, it's good. It's a new year, let's say.
The new year starts officially in February. Let's just go with that. We'll start from scratch.
Well, I think if you go by like the different cultural calendars, I think Chinese New Year is sometimes in February.
Okay, let's run with that.
I don't know when the Muslim New Year is, the Bengali New Year is. I think that's in April sometime. So I've got a lot of mulligans, is what I'm saying.
Right, I like it.
Okay, perfect. So Kathy, so we both have watched Padmavat. Yes. It came out for you guys, actually, no, for both of us on the 26th, or did you guys get it on the 25th?
We got it on the 25th.
Woo! Boo. Americans. Yeah, we got it at 26. If anyone was following my Twitter, you could track my journey of confusion and confuddlings as I couldn't find showtimes for this show no matter what I tried to do. But thank you everyone who responded. I was able to watch it last night. So let's get into the review for this movie. I think there's been a lot of preamble, which I'm doing right now still. But the movie itself. So Kathy, tell me, I mean, synopsize the movie for us really quickly. I don't think there's many people that don't know what this movie's about. And we're going to try to avoid spoilers. There will be a separate spoiler section. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, don't worry. You can still keep listening. We will warn you when we get into spoiler territory.
Right. So this is, like you said, it is based on a poem that we're... And the action is set in the 13th century. It kind of follows a, and you're going to have to correct my pronunciation of names because it can get a little dodgy. But Alauddin Khilji is the is the nephew of the Sultan of Delhi.
Yes,
he is an ambitious guy. This is Ranveer Singh's character, and it's about as he seizes power simultaneously the. The king of the city of Chittor in northern India, who is Ratan Singh, who is Shahid Kapoor,
right,
heads down to what it, I guess the kingdom is, I think, would be in modern day Sri Lanka, the Singhala kingdom. He's looking for pearls, accidentally gets shot by the princess of Singhala, who is Deepika Padukone's character, Padmavati. And she, they fall in love while he heals, and she returns with him to Chittor as his second wife, by the way.
Right.
So he does have a... He goes to get... I thought this was really funny, by the way, just a little digression. The whole setup for his excuse for going to the kingdom to get the pearls is that I think he gave away his wife's favorite necklace, and she's like, you gotta go get me some new pearls. And... So anyway, so he's on an errand for his wife and picks up another wife, which is not really great.
And I also feel like it's kind of like, I mean, if I was watching this with my wife, I'd be like, see, next time you're asking for jewelry, you know, be careful what you ask for. Kind of a thing, because it's like, damn it, I just wanted pearls.
Shoot. So anyway, she returns to Chittor, and through some, I guess, there's a little hubbub with the priest in Chittor, who's named Raghav Chetan,
yes,
who gets caught trying to peep on them while they make out and gets banished from the kingdom. Says, I'm going to vow to destroy the whole city. And he goes and meets up with Alauddin, who is expanding his kingdom. He has he likes collecting precious jewels and beautiful women. And this priest says, hey, I've seen your future. You can take over the whole world, but you need Padmavati.
Right.
She's waiting there. She's the most beautiful woman. She can turn things into gold, all this other stuff that he promises. And of course, Alauddin goes, yes, I need her, and heads off to besiege Chittor. And the rest of the movie from there is about his attempts to capture Padmavati. And Ratan Singh's really dumb attempts to protect the city with Padmavati the whole time saying, like, you idiot, he's setting you up for these traps,
right,
and you keep walking into them, and yeah, she has to rescue him. And so it's about that. It's kind of a love triangle where one party is never really gets to even see the other party.
Like a one-sided love triangle?
It's a very one-sided love triangle.
If I can coin that phrase right now.
We've talked about how the obvious comparisons are to the story of Helen of Troy.
Oh my god. I have a whole thesis statement on how this... Okay, you know what? Yeah, there's definitely comparisons to Troy.
So that's the setup for this long-running battle between the two of them. You know, will Alauddin figure out a way to capture Padmavati? Will Ratan Singh...
You know, and a battle with very few battles, which was one of the surprising parts of the movie, because there's a lot of standing off without any sort of actual fighting, really?
That is, like, if we can talk about what's interesting visually about this, is, like you said, there's not a lot of battles, and one is they're setting up the Alauddin's character early on.
Yes.
Is that he famously takes on the Mongols, who are the other, you know, warring faction in the region. Except you see two armies ride to each other, a giant cloud of dust, you know, billows up into the air as he waits on the side, and then he kind of slow-mo trots his horse through, comes out with the Mongol on the other side of the thing with the Mongol leader's head on a stick, and that's the battle.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of build-up for these visual things that don't pay off, at least the battle stuff. You would expect for something of this scale to have a little bit more cool combat. You know, obviously Bhansali is known for these visually rich movies, and this is no different, at least in terms of costumes and sets and stuff like that. It's very beautiful. I will note that I saw it in 3D. You saw it in just
regular
in 2D,
yeah.
And I didn't have a choice about seeing it in 3D. So, what was really funny is I noticed at times I would lift my glasses up, and you could see more detail without the 3D glasses on than with the 3D. It really has that effect of not only dulling the colors, but just sort of muddying up the experience. So if you really want to enjoy a Bhansali film for how it's supposed to look, I wouldn't see it in 3D. I would just see the standard.
And I don't know about, like, I don't want to make assumptions about technological, but I mean, it just seems to me like maybe Bollywood 3D is not where the standard for, you know, North American 3D might be. Again, I don't want to talk about any shortcomings, but I feel like that would be the case because they don't have a lot of 3D movies in Bollywood.
Right, and I think this was a late addition too, because this was one of the, I don't have 100% proof of this, but this was, I think, in November when the controversy really picked up, and they were waiting, and the censor board said, well, we don't even have a full version of the movie. You know, you didn't know if it was the censor board kicking the can down the road, but I think they really didn't have it because they were still rushing to get the 3D effects.
Oh, okay.
Fair enough. That was what I had heard elsewhere. So this may have been kind of a rush job at the end.
And I mean, in terms of I like that you bring up the battle sequence, because the way I describe this movie at the end of it all is this movie is a movie of infinite buildup. It's kind of like things just continue building up from one to the next without that payoff at all. Like, and again, the Mongol battle is like the first thing, because when you think of a movie like this, and again, and full, I'm going to put this out on Front Street. The most obvious comparison to Padmavat would be Bajirao Mastani by Bhansali.
Right.
Front Street, I have yet to watch Bajirao Mastani. So, But I feel like Bajirao Mustaine does have an opening fight scene or like a battle sequence. Am I wrong?
I think it does. And the other thing is not directly a comparison, but we're coming, you know, this is a year after Bahubali 2 came out, uh-huh. which had some really great uh-huh. fight scenes and a lot of attention paid to the fight yeah. scene. And so it sort of, you're waiting for like the next big Bollywood epic, and this doesn't have those same elements. Not that it has to, but some of the fight scenes even in this, especially if there's any like, you know, one-on-one combat, it's a lot of slow motion,
yeah.
which Bonselli overdoes in this movie. Like, I know, you know, he does it a lot, I think, but like there's, I think like almost every scene between Shahid's character and Deepika's, it's all slow-mo. It's always yeah. the two of them just like slowly circling each other and making like ooh goo goo love eyes at each other. And it was really funny to watch as in my theater, because I don't know if, did you have an interval
and no.
you're showing?
No, I didn't get an interval.
Cause you again, guys have intermission breaks?
No, so theater? I watch majority of these movies in like Cineplex, like AMC style, like North American theaters.
Yeah.
I don't watch them at like the Indian owned okay. sort of theaters. So I don't get that experience of, you know, break and intervals and things like that. If a movie is cut for that, like I think thing was the Ashwarya movie that we did, I forget the name. The Korean one.
Oh,
it was
yeah,
episode 11. Right. But yeah, when the movie's cut with the interval in mind, they will repeat that scene, like post in the interval. This cut didn't seem to even have an interval in the movie. Like
I was waiting
for the interval to come up, because I'm like, I don't know when this movie's halfway, but nothing came up. So
okay, so I didn't miss anything, because we don't get them at the theater where I see stuff.
Okay.
It's likewise, it's a big North American chain, and so it was really funny because this movie is like 2 hours and 45 minutes long. You could see as like the slow mo Shahid Deepika song is starting. By the time the third one comes, with each successive one, more and more people start. You could see them start heading to go to the bathroom or go to get a snack.
Oh, that was me. Yeah, that was I've done that. I won't even lie, because I mean the only song I think I stayed for, which is the only one I wanted to watch, was the Kumar song, which was the first song I believe.
Yeah, which is really really cool. It's just, so it was just funny watching that. It's like everybody's like, okay, I've seen this already. This is a good time to go.
I've YouTubed this. It's fine.
Right.
Now, just going back to that thing that you were saying about the fight scenes. So, like, I'm trying to approach it from, I mean, again, it's really hard not to compare this movie. The reason why I brought up Bajirao is because that would be the most obvious comparison, but I didn't see it. So it's hard to compare this movie to other movies. Like you mentioned, like Troy is what I think this movie's closest to. But or even like other Bollywood, you know, historicals, like, for example, Jodha Akbar. Or any other movie in general, usually of a movie of this length, and let's make no mistake, this is a commercial movie, so we can't say it's making, you know, sacrifices because it's an artsy film. It is a mainstream commercial blockbuster movie intended to make money. I was really surprised that there was no sort of hook in that beginning. There was no sort of, you know, action set piece, which was like, you know, we're setting the tone. Here's what the final scene, or, you know, here's where things are leading up to. But this is just an out of context fight scene to get everyone interested, to get everyone to, you know, solidify their butts in that seat for the next 3 hours. I was surprised we didn't get that. When that Mongol scene was, again, building up, I'm so like, here we go. Like, we're going to get some, like, slicing, dicing, awesome stuff. And he rides into the cloud, and then you cut to the next scene from a perspective shift, and he's coming out of the cloud with the head, and I'm like, is it done? Like, is that it? Because that seems very anticlimactic, like, for what that should have been.
Yeah, and especially to see Ranveer, how he bulked up for this. He's you know, massive and muscular and all that. God, it'd be fun to see him, like, really get to do a lot of fighting. And you don't get that in this.
No.
It's, so...
Now, do you feel that was dictated by the content, like the other content of this story, which again was a little bit controversial? Do you think it was maybe like, okay, well, we don't want to, you know, piss off a group of people if we see them violently fighting, you know, the Muslims violently fighting these other group of characters, and that, like, do you think that had any sort of dictated that choice in the filmmaking, the storytelling perspective?
I wonder. I mean, it's tough to know.
It seems like a wasted opportunity. Like, hey, we're doing a 3-hour movie. Let's give him something, like, insanely awesome in the first couple of scenes.
It seems like it was so committed to Bonsali's sort of, like, lush, romantic leanings in the way he makes movies, that it's almost like he tried to approach it that way and like avoiding a lot of the violence, because this is a very this is not a violent movie really in a lot of ways. I mean, despite the fact that there are some fights and all that, there's not gore, there's not yeah, it's not gory or bloody really, and they sort of pull away at times, you know, well. Yeah, so and they sort of pull away at certain times to avoid showing things that are too gruesome. So it's, I wonder if that was in mind, where it was sort of taking into account like, ooh, families might be at this, which would be weird because it's a very like adult kind of story.
Yeah, and I mean, especially when you have the characterization that Ranveer did in this movie, Ranveer Singh's character of Alauddin Khilji, I don't know why you would hold anything back when you have that guy doing what he does in this movie, which to me was flipping terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, there's that song near the end, and again, not spoiling anything, there's just this song of him, I guess, celebrating or whatever.
That's when I went to the bathroom,
that is,
by the way.
Oh my
I
God. Okay, you gotta watch that song, because I've never been as freaked out or terrified by any sort of Bollywood actor on screen, horror, thriller, otherwise. That.
Whoa.
I'm watching that, him dance in that sequence, the choreography, his facial expression, I'm like, holy crap. Like, this will, like, if I was a young girl or a boy, like a young kid, I would get nightmares.
Yeah.
I'm not even discounting that possibility that I might get nightmares tonight. Like, it's,
right.
Which again, and I'm not saying this was a bad thing, I'm just saying this was, Ranveer did an amazing job in this movie, I think. I just don't see the point of holding back other things when you've got a character this vile, this repulsive, doing the things he does, saying the things he does. I don't get why you would hold back on violence.
Yeah.
Which again, you could easily cut away violence, no blood. Nolan does it all the time. You could do a PG-13 rating with violence.
Yep.
You don't have to get gory, but yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah.
But speaking of the performance, what did you think of, I mean, this is a great cast, obviously. This is like, this cast is one of the reasons why this movie was so hyped.
Right.
What did you think about all the performances?
You know, so much of the talk is about Ranveer because he is really, really great. It's a, it's a very different, you know, performance. You know, he makes really interesting choices in his career. It's, you kind of, you know, I mistakenly sometimes think of him as his off-screen persona, you know, his goofy outfits and stuff like that. But he does a lot of very serious stuff, and he is a really hard worker, and he's really dedicated. And it was a lot of fun to see him, you know, be kind of like choose scenery a little bit, but not too much. And I think he plays that really well. He gets a great super sidekick in Jim Sarb.
Yeah.
Our beloved Jim Sarb, who plays his slave and male lover.
Yeah.
I like the fact that it's kind of like everybody around him is, you know, around Alauddin in his camp is just like, all right, whatever. And that's kind of cool. And Jim Sarb is great. And so that's really fun. There's a lot of good performances. I will say, just sort of segueing into Deepika's performance, like what I like about both Deepika and Jim, and Jim's like sort of limited body of work thus far, like both of them have that quality where like I have trouble imagining them ever embarrassing themselves on screen, if you know what I mean. Like it's like that there's a certain dignity and professionalism, and obviously Deepika is going to look dignified when she's dressed up as a queen and she's wearing all this beautiful jewelry, but like she just all the time, like in every scene, you're just like, wow, she's great. And, you know, at least I was. So so it's got like they're really, really good. You get to see how good especially the three of them are and what real professionals they are.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. I mean, if there's anything I would have to say about my problems with the performance, I mean, again, Ranveer Singh, I don't think we need to say much about his performance because, again, he's the one getting all the rave reviews. My only concern is that I feel that's a little unfair given it's a movie about Rani Padmavati, supposedly, and, you know, Rawal Ratan Singh, supposedly, who's supposed to be her husband, defending her honor. They're technically the protagonists of the movie. I felt that their characters were a little underserved. Because I was expecting from Deepika something, and again, I'm not saying she did anything bad here or it wasn't good enough or whatever. I don't think she had enough opportunities to kind of, like, for example, if I was to compare this performance to something else of hers, like, I don't think she did anything outstanding here versus, let's say, Piku, which a period piece where she didn't have the aids of, you know, looking regal and glorious shots, and it was a very contemporary, real-world setting. Even Shahid Kapoor, and I've been a fan of Shahid Kapoor's for a long time. He's had more misses than he's had hits. His last one was Urta Punjab, so I'm like, yes, like, you're following this up with Urta Punjab? Yes, my boy. But, and again, and he was amazing in this, but I'm still kind of like, he didn't have much to do.
He kind of had a glassy-eyed expression in a lot of his scenes. Like, it was, he had like kind of the same expression on his face. And he looks good though. He was shirtless. It was funny to see like the difference too in the way that that Deepika was not objectified. You don't see any skin. They tried to keep it consistent with that. Meanwhile,
but Shahid the is other fine. It's fine.
Yeah, the other two, you know, Ranveer and Shahid, shirts are off.
Yep.
You get a little Jim Sarb shoulder action. So that was kind of cool.
No, Jim Sarb, he was shirtless. In his intro scene, he was shirtless, where he had the cover on or whatever when he was first introduced. Like,
you didn't get like full shirtless though, did you? I don't remember. Maybe I passed out once the shoulder got was exposed. And had
clearly, well, I wasn't paying attention, but he looked like he's in shape. Like, I'm sure the guy.
No, he looks good.
Yeah, he looks good. And the other thing too about Sarb also, I gotta say, is I wish the way they introduced him was amazing. Like this foreign sort of exotic assassin guy. I was disappointed we didn't get more of that afterwards. Like, he was just kind of there for the rest of the scenes. I wish we, and again, I think this goes back to if we had maybe more fight scenes or more battle scenes, we would see him perform. But I was kind of waiting to see Jim Sarb with a little small dagger just slitting throats and stuff. I don't know, maybe that's just me.
No, that would have been so great. One of the problems is that because of so much like slow-mo and accommodating a lot of songs and just kind of stretch, it's like the movie is stretched out without a lot of character development. And I think, like you said, Rani Padmavati and Ratan Singh both really suffer from that. There's too much Alauddin without also getting into the heart of the motivations behind him.
Yeah, without context.
Yeah, it's really surface level, and that is where it gets sort of dodgy. That like things are kept so surface level. Mm-hmm. He's just greedy. He's lustful. He's kind of feral. Oh, and by the way, he's Muslim, and everybody else is too. And so that's where, if they had explored more of that, I think it wouldn't feel like that was such a, you know, like a conflation of those two, you know, his religion with his personality. There's not a lot of depth when it comes to world building.
Mm-hmm.
Like there aren't a lot of, you know, it's sort of like you would have these characters who would be introduced, and like there's someone in the court, Chittor, who's like says something and they're like, oh, Bottle, you can't do that.
Yeah,
and you're like, okay, I'm gonna have to remember Bottle, and then he goes away and then he only shows up like an hour later.
And there's a reference to him, and they kind of play this really emotional angle regarding Bottle and his family. And I didn't remember because it was 2.5 hours ago when he was even referenced.
Yeah.
So when we come back to that scene and everyone's being really sort of like it's clearly an important scene. And again, not to spoil anything, but I'm sitting there watching and I'm like, who is this? Like, what is this about?
And, I didn't realize.
And you're completely right. Like a total lack of world building. Now, I mean, what I did appreciate though, when you brought up the fact that he was incidentally a Muslim, I did like that the movie didn't make the tension and the conflict about a Muslim versus Hindu thing.
Right.
I like that even when there is the conflict was kind of, you know, overt and it came to the surface, it wasn't like, oh, the Muslims are coming or as Hindus, we got to defend. It was more of like there was elements of pride as a Rajput, but I think that was more in like just kind of bragging about who he is, Shahid Kapoor's character, than, you know, Hindus will slaughter the Muslims. Like, I like that the conflict wasn't about the religious stuff, especially because throughout the movie, you don't really know. I mean, we know that Alauddin Khilji is coming because he wants Padmavati's beauty and he wants to make her a part of his harem or whatever.
Yeah.
But I like that throughout the movie, until I think Act 3, it doesn't become clear why he's coming to Chitto or why he's invading. Everyone's kind of just like, he's a conqueror. This is what he does.
Yeah, which is funny because I guess historically, there's some, you know, there's a lot of debate that Rani Padmavati did not actually exist. There's no real evidence other than this poem. We do know that in reality that Alauddin Khilji did attack Chittor to expand his kingdom. So I guess you just have to kind of expect that if you're in the 13th century and you've got this castle that eventually someone's going to come try and attack you.
Well, that's why you have
for
the
whatever
castle.
Reason. Yeah, exactly. Regardless of how good looking your wife is.
It can't be that. Come on.
Yeah. Mentioning the Rajput pride, what's very funny about this is, first of all, like even though it was a lot of the Rajput groups that were protesting this, like it's very clear how far Bhansali has gone to try and placate them and hold this up. And yet at the same time...
To a fault, I would say, even.
Yes. And that it almost becomes a joke that any time... Ratan Singh mentions, oh, well, my honor as a Rajput dictator. He's about to do something really dumb. Like, he's going to walk into... Like Padmavati at one point is like, you know, this is a trap that Alauddin has set up for you. And he's like, well, yes, but honor demands that I march right into it.
I forget who it was. I don't know if it was a mutual friend of ours. I saw someone on Twitter where someone was like, new drinking game. Every time Ratan Singh mentions Rajput pride and follows that up with bad decisions.
Yes. And that's what becomes so fun. And that's what gets so hard to take as the movie's going on. You're just like, oh, why does this guy get to have so much power? You know, it's a story imbalance. And it is, you know, that he could have just brought the whole problem to an end, like on multiple occasions. But it's just, I've got some dumb mitigating circumstance that... is going to doom Meeting, you know, like,
and I will sort of, and I mean, see, I don't want to rack too much on the pride making bad decision thing, because we do get that. That's kind of like a historical or movie trope where, you know, vanity or hubris is the downfall of certain characters. But there's a way to do it, you know, properly.
Yeah.
And again, and this is where in the spoilers, I will make direct comparisons to Troy, because Troy has a lot of this in Eric Bana's character. But they do it in a way you can find fault in, sure, but you can't, like, you can understand that, okay, he's kind of in a corner. But again, we'll leave that for the spoilers. Let's wrap up the spoiler-free discussion. I just wanted to ask you really quickly about Bhansali himself. He takes pride in the music, and this was written and co-written and directed by him. How did you feel of this as a Bhansali movie as a whole?
I don't think it's one of my favorites. I mean, it's definitely not, because it's, there are just all these mistakes that we've mentioned before about the pacing, the characterization. And for it being as long as it is, it just doesn't, you know, I'm pretty forgiving of him. I generally like his stuff, because I like anybody who, you know, if I'm going to pay money to go see a movie in the theater, I would like it to look good. I mean, or I can handle a lot of stuff, as long as it looks cool and all that. I mean, this does, but this is where you see that, like, the rest of it doesn't quite live up to the visuals, and the visuals aren't quite enough to sustain it. It's not going to be something I would revisit.
Yeah, I mean, once it comes out on streaming or whatever, I will rewatch it just to simply kind of see where my reaction might have changed between the coming months or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, I mean... I have to wonder, though. I mean, it's just it seems to me like it's weird, right? Like, when it's kind of like when you hear about someone you know really well doing something dumb, and before you get to talk to them, you're kind of wondering, well, he must have been tired. Maybe he had a bad day. Maybe it was the influence of his friends. Like, I just kind of, because I'm looking back at his filmography, and I don't think there's any movie he's done, maybe with the exception of Savaria. But even then, like, Savaria has more good to it than bad. But there's no other movie that I can look back on and say, yeah, this, I don't know what the hell he was thinking with this, because almost all of his movies I've appreciated on a level of, like, this guy's a genius. So I'm just wondering, and again, with Bollywood, I guess it's hard because we don't get reporting on movie news and we get more celebrity nonsense, but early on when he was making this movie, he did get assaulted. I mean, like, the first shooting schedules, his set got destroyed, he was assaulted by these protesters and things like that. I just wonder how much of that trauma, how much of going through those incidents, you know, kind of cause changes during the filmmaking process, in the storytelling process. Like, you know, there's always so much debate about, you know, the last Justice League movie, and there's all these controversy, this version, that version. I wonder how much of this movie he maybe changed or modified, or how his approach might have been not, you know, classic Bhansali, because he made this movie under such duress, you know, off-screen and on-screen, that I mean, I can't think of any other explanation of why this movie doesn't live up to his own standards, in my perspective.
Well, and it's, I think this is, that's a very apt segue into what will constitute spoilers, because my problem with the movie is why he chose this story. What did he do in the first place? Was there any way that, that this could have been a good movie, no matter how well he made it, if he was at the top of his craft? Is there something about this story that renders it, that's always going to make it fall short? So
I mean that's definitely something we're going to explore right now. So this is it, guys. This is your obligatory spoiler warning. From here on out, we will be discussing specific plot details, plot points, including and especially the climax of the movie Padmavat. So be warned, if you haven't seen this movie yet and you don't want to be spoiled, please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts and any other podcasting app. Feel free to go watch the movie and then come back to this portion of the show for us to continue our discussion. So again, spoiler warning, don't say I didn't warn you. So the first thing in spoilers that I have to ask, I know we'll discuss what you brought up about why this story, why now. I have a better question about this movie, and this is a question I've been asking myself throughout the movie. Why is half the movie dedicated to Ranveer Singh's obviously antagonist character?
It's a good question. It's I think it kind of highlights how weak the story is in a lot of ways, that there's not a lot that really happens. I mean, it's pretty like A to B, you know, the any traps that are set out and any trickery that happens is pretty it's very telegraphed. So it's just not really that complicated of a story. I mean, he wants to get in the castle, they don't want him to get in. I mean, it's and you're missing a lot of those motivations behind it. Like, there's very little questioning of, you know, why are we besieging this castle? Everybody just kind of goes with it. And same thing with, like, obviously Ratan Singh is like, oh, you want to come in here and get my wife? No, I'm not gonna let you. Like, so
but dinner though is cool.
Dinner is cool. Like, Oh god.
Yeah, so I mean,
Ratan Singh.
Like, that's kind of my thing too. Like, I mean, usually, like, when, I mean, honestly, the movie started with Ranveer Singh's character.
Yeah.
We went like flashback of how he got married and you know, how his rise to power. And I'm thinking that this has a point, right? I'm thinking there's a payoff to this. Like, eventually we're gonna get something that humanizes him as why he's so evil, why he's so despicable, why he's so, like, he's vile by all accounts. Yeah. But there's no motivation for his actions. There's no justification of the terrible things he does, as he was molested as a kid, his parents didn't love him enough, there was a traumatic past, something happened to him in the past, which is why he hates, you know, nothing to explain, especially because he has, his character has this one defining mantra, right? That anything that's unique in the world, I must have, or belongs to me, which is why he, this is just the motivation of why he wants Rani Padmavati once he hears about her beauty. But again, there's nothing beyond that. And yet we get half the movie at the expense of the main leads. We get to see this guy's story,
and you get no backstory at all on any of, like, on the two protagonists. And it's and I think it further suffers because she, you know, when we first meet Padmavati, she's, you know, in the forest, she's shooting arrows, she's hunting, she's running around in this, like, cool jungle kingdom, and then it's like, you go to Chittor, I just put on all my jewels and I just walk around and I'll have, like, quiet conversations with my husband, and occasionally I will get to, like, do something.
Dictate some changes in there, but...
But it's just like she was this sort of action hero when we first meet her, and then it's like, nope, you got married, now you're... which I know is probably the way things would have been.
It is, which is fine.
But it also then sets up, like, why does she react certain things she does as the movie goes on just don't seem to fit with who she is. It's almost like in the year that she spends at Chittor, which is, you know, that's all she's there for before before the attack happens. it's like her whole personality gets erased, which kind of sucks. It's, you know, like, yeah. So, because that's always the, that's like jumping ahead a little bit to the end, if I might do so, mm-hmm. that, like, as the castle is under siege, like, she has these skills as an archer. Like, even, like, how, you know, her, she just sort of, like, gives up and, you know, comes up with, like, the most passive way of denying Alauddin his victory, mm-hmm. instead of, like, how satisfying would it have been her to have her up on the ramparts, fire an arrow into him or something like that, and be like, you wanted to see me? Here I am. This is the last time you'll ever see me. Boom, you know.
And especially because there is so much ample opportunity, because the majority of the last scene is him, Alauddin Khizri, on his own, running through the castle.
Slow-mo running.
You know,
as
no...
As ladies run away from him in slow-mo or walk
but
in slow-mo.
But there's, like, no resistance, yeah. no son of his sidekicks. He's legit running through an empty castle by himself. Yeah. Any well-placed archer could just take him out.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that's a different movie. I mean, right. I completely get... Yeah. I get what you're saying, and... I mean, I was really satisfied at the end when they did throw the burning coals on him and stuff. Which to me was like, why didn't you plan that out from 20 minutes ago when he was running through your castle?
You had all this time.
Like,
exactly. There were no other defenses in the castle.
Right.
It's a castle. It's
but,
a castle.
But I think that's a, different movie altogether. But
although I don't know that it is necessarily, because I think some of the complaints I've seen online, like, about people who have problems with this movie is that, like, oh, well, it's just, you're trying to make it adhere to 21st century standards. Well, first of all, it's a movie made in the 21st century by a man living in the 21st century for an audience in the 21st mm-hmm. century. It's not, nobody's criticizing the original poem, because obviously we get what that was like when it was written. And not to mention that, Bhansali does change the poem. This is not like some faithful word-for-word mm-hmm. adaptation. There are gods and goddesses in the original poem. Mm-hmm. There's like other supernatural elements. Ratan Singh finds out about Padmavati in the first place because she has a talking parrot that escapes and flies and tells.
Oh my god, what a better movie that would have been.
No kidding, right? Like, oh my god, CGI talking parrot.
Oh
that
my
would
goodness.
Be great.
We got an ostrich that was CGI in this movie.
That is true. If you didn't talk, then maybe things change.
Prequel. But, so that's the prequel.
Yeah, that's right. So we're not getting... This isn't like a strict thing. He's taken liberties, so why not have the liberty of having her exercise more agency and be like, you know, and fire an arrow or something like that. Utilize the skills that we know she has. Because otherwise... Why show her having those skills in the first place if she's ultimately just going to be reduced to her looks? You know, it's or I don't. I think what somebody said, like, this really is a damsel in distress movie because it is in a lot of ways. And it's funny that she has the agency to go rescue her husband,
right?
But not save herself.
Which is so weird because in a lot of ways, I mean, Ratan Singh is the damsel in distress for a major part of this movie.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because he gets himself into trouble. He doesn't listen to his wife. He screws up. She goes. She protects him with, like, a badass, like, you know, like, deception of warriors and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, in the, like, she's smart. She's strategical. Right. She's clearly, you know, understands war. And also, like, I mean, just going back to, like, you know, the fact that pre-marriage she was living... You know, Ratan Singh and her meet in the forest while she's hunting and he's hunting. And the weird part is, like, and he's there for a couple of days, if not weeks.
Yeah.
And what was weird to me was that, oh, she's a princess who's living in the forest in what looks like a temple in the caves. But there's no backstory to that.
Yeah.
But
I want to know more about that.
But we have to find out about, like, how frigging Ranveer gets an ostrich to ask for Aditya Rao Haidari's hand in marriage, and how he screws someone on his way. Like, this is the thing that I've been struggling with this movie.
Yeah.
That the movie's entitled Padmavati. It was formerly called Padmavati. We have less Padmavati and less her husband than we have the guy that's trying mm-hmm. to own her or kill her or rape her. Like, this to me didn't make sense. And I feel like a lot of this was... And this is where I have to say, I feel like Bhansali really just became enamored with Ranveer Singh. To me, is like a classic case of superstar actor taking significance in story. And I want to come back to... Because again, we've seen this happen before too. Like, for example, I want to talk about the Doom franchise, where the first movie was... you know, Abhishek Bachchan and John Abraham. John Abraham was the villain, unexpected super duper hit, which started this trend of casting high profile Bollywood actors as the villain. Hrithik was the second one, Aamir was the third one. By which point I'm like, isn't Abhishek the hero of this movie? Like, I don't understand why the villain has backstory and the villain has motivations and the villain has like a major chunk of the movie. And this is what this movie reminded me of, which seems completely more for like vanity reasons than anything else. The amount of times that Ranveer Singh's character looks into the camera directly to me was like, no, we get it. You're the big shot here. I understand. Like, it just felt so forced and so unnecessary.
And that it almost like, there's a lot of things that you could have done without risking pissing off the parties who ultimately were pissed off anyway by this. And because what I think the real failure is to set up is that there was not enough setup of drama within the castle. Mm-hmm. The jealousy on the part of Ratan Singh's first wife, Nagmati, who has every reason to be super pissed. And the few times we see her, she's like, she's just like, well, this is all just a problem because you showed up, Padmavati. Yeah. And it would have been more interesting to see the two of them sort of like how that plays off, how, and in the end, poor Nagmati, who just gets screwed over this entire movie, gets usurped by the newer beautiful wife, gets her castle attacked by the beautiful wife, and then ultimately has to follow the new beautiful wife's directions that were like, well, we gotta all just kill ourselves. And it's like, great, you she didn't ask for any of this. And so like, how interesting would it have been to take a little liberty with the light, you know, with this, had she not like sent out like, you know, I don't know, done something within the castle, tried to undermine Padmavati, or came to some realization that maybe Padmavati was right about something, or tried to, you know, anything like that, to escape.
See, my points are even like a lot less consequential than your ideas. Like, my things are like, I'm still working within the construct of, okay, this is based on a poem, I know they can't piss people off, but there's still very minor changes you can do to build up the legend of Padmavati, right? Like, for example, like, she comes into this castle, everyone's enamored by her, everyone respects her. That scene where, you know, the king gets taken hostage, and the demand is, and everyone stands up for Padmavati, no, she won't go, she's our queen. And the funny part to me was that scene, they're talking down to the elder queen, who they should have more loyalty for. Like, you're stupid, what are you talking about? Get out of here, right? But the cool part was, I mean, not the cool part, like, what I thought was a wasted opportunity at, again, highlighting the legend of Padmavati, was you have the older wife, who's obviously upset, she's got a rival, fine, that's understandable, she's gonna be bitchy to her, understandable. But what was cool was, she was like, my king, it's all your fault. So then she goes and rescues the king, brings her back, and I'm expecting the queen is going to be like welcoming her, going, oh my God, I was wrong about you. You know, you brought my suhag back to me and stuff. Like, all this sort of redemption. And then that makes you go, holy crap, Padmavati's so awesome. She even won over the girl whose husband she stole in a way, right?
Yeah.
But no, like, that didn't happen. And to me, it was like, this would have changed nothing in the story, but this would have made you further go, wow, what a, this person, if she was real, was an amazing person. Like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. But no, like a waste. And then there's that scene of her being grumpy and like bitter of like, you know, I need to get me my sewing tools. I'm not going to. Like, I know. I'm like, what was the point of that? Like, why was that scene in that movie at this point?
I don't understand it. And it's why it was so surface level. And it's this is, again, you know, if you want to talk about how his Bhansali's, you know, narration might have changed and all that, like, that should have been in the first draft. Or in earlier drafts. I don't think that's nothing that should have changed, you know, when he started to experience problems. And that's where I think this is just bad writing on his part and his co-writer's part. Because, like I said, they're taking liberties with this. This is not a strict, you know, depiction of the poem. So just use some good narrative skills, you know. It's not that hard.
This is kind of where also I want to start going into the comparisons now, just because you have, for example, like with this situation with the character of the older queen, you know, Nagmavati. I'm sorry, I don't know.
I think it's Nagmavati.
Yeah. I mean, this is where we go back to what you were talking about, that there is literally no world building in this story, which from a movie set in this time period of this genre, we've come to expect, not because, well, you know, we need it, or this is my expectations for a movie like this. But, like, in those times, it wasn't just you know, an isolated situation. It wasn't a wake up Cid where it's one person's journey through life. It's,
right.
You've got the king, you've got his his conciliaries, you've got his mm-hmm. you've got cousins. They have massive families in these situations.
Yeah.
Cousins, aunts, uncles, everyone's involved. And this is where I'm going to compare to Jodha Akbar, where it's the movie starts out with all these relationships and they're confusing at first. But every character has like these minor things to do, and like Sonu Sood's character comes back at the end and saves, you know, Aishwarya. Like there's these things where it's like you understand that okay, there is more here than what we're seeing. There's relationships here beyond this story that right. all kind of impact their lives, the characters' lives, and what happens and their motivations. None of that is in this movie.
No, I mean that's just basic character writing, where every character, especially every named character, has to have a motivation in every scene they're in. You know, what do they want? You have to treat them like real people. And this movie doesn't treat any of the characters, even the major characters, really as real people. Like you talked about, what's Alauddin's motivation other than just greed? It's so surface level. And not to mention then you don't get into those other things like there's hints of like jealousy on Jim Sarb's part. By the way, I love that he doesn't have a character name. He's just Jim Sarb.
Oh my God.
That there's like hints that like he's not so keen on being supplanted by Padmavati should Alauddin succeed. Yeah. But he doesn't do anything with it. And they don't explore that. And like there's just so much time in the movie. Like that's, you have to think about what he would want and not just like he's here because I need him to say a certain line that will prompt Ranveer to say another line, and then we move on to the next thing. It's just not interesting. It's just very, really frustrating that the little bits of character development you do get just don't seem to pay off, and they don't seem to be consistent throughout.
You're completely right. I mean, this was my frustration with this movie, where I'm like, the things I like, we don't get enough of. The things that don't make sense is the prevailing content of the movie.
Yeah.
Let's go superficial too. Like, I thought Shahid Kapoor and Deepika Padukone looked amazing together.
Yeah.
On like a chemistry level, but there's nearly not enough of that relationship for me to. Again, even superficially, people to enjoy this movie and say that, you know what, like, for example, again, I'm comparing to Jodha Akbar. A lot of people that I know, my wife loves this movie because there's a huge sort of significance and a huge part of the movie is dedicated to their love story, to their attraction, their witty banter, their sexual chemistry, their physical, their intellectual chemistry, and their, you know, back and forth. And so you have enough in that movie to go, you know what, this is a nice movie. Like, I'll watch this. And I had problems with the other stuff. I had problems with the political stuff, the fight scenes, the world building. Not the world building, but like the what happens and his motivations. Like, I had a problem with all these other scenes. But if you put that movie on for me now, I'll watch it. Because there's enough
because you want
there.
That care, you want that lead couple to succeed because you like them.
Right.
And I don't think we get that with these two, because there's just such an imbalance. Like, where Ratan Singh in this is just like such a doof. And he just, and you're just like, I don't know, you know, when one of her options, theoretically at least, should have been like, you know, you just give me the go ahead, honey. I'm going to return back to my jungle kingdom and this problem all goes away.
Right.
And you know, that's a kind of sacrifice she could have made. Easy. But that just like never comes up. And it's, and I don't know.
I mean, even that, I can understand that, okay, maybe that's more humiliating for the Rajputs that your wife went back, haha, kind of a thing. Or maybe they don't go back to their parents' house in that situation. I don't know what the time is. I can't comment on that. But, like, for example, to in the defense of Shahid Kapoor's Ratan Singh, again, I go back to Troy. In Troy, you've got a character similar to that, which is Eric Bana. He's the, you know, the prince of Troy, and he has to make these hard decisions. His brother screws up, and you know, he's got enemy at the gates, and he has to make these decisions, which he knows, you know, are going to get him killed, or that he knows he's never going to come back to see his wife and his kid. But at the same time, he's duty-bound for his countrymen, and again, they set him up like that he's a smart guy, but at the same time, his honor and everything falls on his country and the defense of his country. In that movie, Brad Pitt is essentially the bad guy. He is essentially, and there's a lot of similarities. He's, you know, he's a womanizing Casanova. He's very feral and brutal in nature, just like Ranveer Singh's character in Padmavat. There's a lot of these parallels, but there's a point in the story where, again, keeping in true to his character, Brad Pitt's character is very apathetic and just goes, fuck it, I'm leaving. Like, this is not my fight. I don't give a shit about any of this. I'm bouncing. Mm-hmm. And then again, something happened. There's a plot point where his nephew, or sorry, his cousin, pretends to be him, goes into battle with Eric Bana's character. Eric Bana kills him unknowingly, thinking he's Brad Pitt, which then again gives Brad Pitt a revenge story angle to stay in the fight, come and defeat the Trojans and kill Eric Bana's character, which again, you're rooting for both these characters. That's the best part about the story, right? Well, you've got Brad Pitt, you've got Eric Bana, both heroes, both main lead actors in their respective careers, going up against one another, and you're both like, oh my god, like, I'm rooting for both these guys, but I understand their motivation. It's sad, it's tragic, but ah.
And that their motivations are, it's this feeling of inevitability.
Yes.
And that's what's so funny is that on the flip side in this movie, you have Deepika travels into Delhi, into the heart of the Sultanate, to rescue her husband, and with the aid of Alauddin's wife, played by Aditi Rahudari, who also looks fabulous in this movie.
Also underserved.
Totally. And she makes this great sacrifice to free Ratan Singh. Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, we don't have much time. You guys have to escape by these tunnels. I'll just stay here and I'm going to bear the brunt of it. Right. And Ratan Singh, freaking idiot, goes, hold on. I got to go tell Alauddin that we're leaving. And then goes and does it. And they're like just waiting around like, you idiot. And he goes and does it. And there's Alauddin on the throne by himself, no guards, totally injured after an attack on his life. And
gives him his sword.
Ratan Singh says, aha, I'm telling you, I got you. I'm getting away. My wife rescued me. And I could kill you right now, which I should do, because unless I'm dumb, but I won't, because Rajputs don't attack the injured. And he leaves him, and it's just like, you don't deserve her. You don't deserve her kingdom. You should have just been left to rot in your cell, because everything else would have gone fine without your dumbassery.
And see, the thing about that, too, is it's not even that he goes to speak with him, because, again, up until that part, that's the plan, right? The plan is Padmavati is going to come to Delhi, and she's going to meet her husband. The husband's going to leave. He's going to be allowed to go free. Yeah. Then she's going to come meet Alauddin Khilji. That's his part of the plan. So even when Ratan shows up, because even that was my first reaction. I'm like, what are you doing, stupid? But I'm like, oh, no, wait. That was part of the conditions. Fine. Okay. Right. Maybe he's coming to say goodbye. Him leaving is not exposure of the plan that she's rescuing him. So that's fine. But then right before he turns and leaves, he goes really close up to Khilji's face, to Alauddin's face, and tells him, I'm leaving. And then I'm taking my wife. And I'm like, no!
Yeah.
Stupid!
Yeah.
And
he gets... I love that it's played out like... So there's this... They sneak all these fighters into the castle who are like, okay, we're going to buy you time. It's this great, glorious death on the battlefield for them that didn't need to happen.
Nope.
It didn't need to happen if he just would have... scooted out the tunnel like the plan was.
Like you just killed 800 of your men because you, I don't know what it is, like, just had to talk about what you were doing? Like, spoiler, don't tell him that part of the plan.
It's just like, does whatever, you know, whatever notions of honor and pride and all that go along with this story, the story itself does a really bad job of making them look like they're worth upholding. When the honor is ultimately like, I have to do this for me. Sorry, all the rest of you guys are going to die. Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to lose my whole kingdom ultimately anyway, and everybody is going to die, and my whole entire family is going to be wiped out of history. But at least I died by my principles, which then cuts to, again, my biggest problem with the story and the sort of irredeemable part of it. This poem was written 500 years ago. Or more. And it's fine. Totally fine within context. I believe everything about it. It always is going to end with Padmavati and all the other women of the court killing themselves before Alauddin's army. This is, you know, this movie didn't just happen. It's not like it just exists. Mm-hmm. The poem exists. But Bhansali chose what movie he wanted to make. He could have told any story. He could have told a Desi version of Helen of Troy. It didn't have to be this.
Yeah.
He could have done any story. He could have remade Shakespeare. Whatever story he wanted to tell, he could have told. And he picked this, which always ends with the heroine killing herself to avoid rape, and with an end note that talks about her sacrifice and all that. And why? Why did he think this was going to resonate? With whom did he think this story was going to resonate? Yeah. Me, as you know, I'm not speaking as, you know, there's plenty of women in India who have this exact same problem with I do, that this is yet another story telling me, in celebrating the fact that the only thing that matters is the integrity of my body. Yeah. If that's violated, I don't have any reason to live. And that's another story. And so I don't understand why this was the movie that he wanted to make, and what did he think people would get out of it? Like, what did you get out of this? Like, as a man, like, it's, you know, like, what, I don't know who his audience is.
Yeah.
I don't know what, and I just can't fathom any other message than the one that I received as being the one that was intended to be received by me.
Yeah, I mean, these are all insanely fair points, and I completely get everything you're saying, because that's, I mean, with movies and with any sort of art, that's what you look at, right? You're looking mm-hmm. at, you know, what is the point of this today? What commentary is this trying to say? What sort of relation does this have to anything happening right now in the era that this is happening in? Which is how we look back on all art, right? That this painting was made at this time because blah, 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 influenced by blah, blah. So I don't know. I honestly, I'm not smart enough to answer those questions that you just kind of posed. But in terms of what I got out of it, I mean, when you look back at everything else this movie did, in terms of, okay, was it engaging? Not really. Were the characters like someone that you were, you know, just falling in love with? And not really. You go look back at the story and you're like, was this an engaging enough story that you were just like on the edge of your seat from beginning to end? Well, not really. Mm-hmm. So then you come at the climax, and I'm just kind of like, it felt to me insanely abrupt.
Yeah.
And sorry, and before we get to the comment, I do want to kind of walk back a little bit again and talk about Ratan Singh and one specific incident in the scene pre-climax, which kind of leads to the climax, is the last fight scene. When we get a one-on-one fight scene between these two characters, which the setup of which, again, makes no sense.
Right.
Because the armies are at, you know, in front of each other, they're ready for confrontation, they're ready for battle, and Ratan Singh rides out, you know, to fight Khijli on his own. However, there's no preconceived agreements, though.
No.
Of, again, which Troy has in spades. Troy has a lot of characters going, hey, instead of our armies fighting and all this death and destruction happening to all these people, let's end this between you and me one-on-one. Orlando Bloom does that with, I want to say Brendan Gleeson, not 100% sure, but he does this with one character, he fails. Eric Bana and Achilles then do it. Again, Eric Bana, you know, the Trojan. Spoiler for Troy, 2004. Eric Bana's character dies.
Specifically that it's Orlando Bloom who stole Brendan Gleeson's wife.
Exactly.
And so it comes down to the two guys about who this fight is really about.
Exactly, right.
So,
and it's just, and even in the beginning of the movie, the opening scene is that. It establishes these rules of war that armies can forfeit fighting each other if representatives of each army fight each other one-on-one, winner dictates the winner of the war. We don't have to have thousands of people killing each other until last man stands. So this is established in the movie. Nowhere in Padmavat is that even discussed or established. And here's the messed up part. So when Khijli, who has established himself as not being honorable, he flipping kidnapped you literally a couple of months ago, I want to say. He tortured you. He wants your girl. He came and he was going to lay siege to your castle a couple of, like, maybe last year or whatever.
Yeah.
So at no point can his honor be trusted? Can you trust him as a human being? And much less, you didn't even have a conversation that that's how this fight was going to go down. That, hey, you and me, one-on-one, our armies don't have to fight. Win or take all.
Yeah.
I win, you leave. You win, take over my castle, we're good to go. You don't have to kill anyone.
Right.
In which case, and here's the other thing, too. If that was a conversation, then would we need for this Johar thing to have happened? Because, again, if all the men in the army were still alive because, hey, our king died, based on his honor and his word, we have to now concede and let this guy rule our kingdom. All the men are still around. The army still exists. Thousands and thousands of men are with their wives as families. I'm sure there'd be civil uprising. I'm sure it wouldn't be the best place to live. But will all these women have to kill themselves? And so to
me, still be alive.
So to me, at the end of it, when he gets arrowed by Jim Sarb, you know, repeatedly in the yeah. back, Ratan Singh has this one line, which I'm like, I had to fight the urge to scream in the theater. He looks at Kishore and he's like, you couldn't even fight this one fight with principles? I'm like, where in the last 3 hours did he convey to you that he had principles? I believe he at one point said that he doesn't have principles.
Right.
And I don't understand, is if that's just bad writing or like,
It is totally, my review has, this is my husband's idea, I will give him this credit, because I don't know if you followed the Peanuts cartoons, but the joke was always that Lucy pulls the football for Charlie Brown, this time, you can kick it, I'm not going to pull it away from you, and every time Charlie Brown goes, okay, maybe this time, he goes to kick it, she pulls the ball away, and he falls on his ass, and that's exactly what happens in this movie. Ratan Singh is Charlie Brown.
Only difference is, Lucy doesn't even have to say anything. He just assumes that she's going to let him kick the ball. He's giving you no reason to believe anything you're assuming, and yet you're putting your life on the line assuming that.
You learn as a child in the neighborhood when you have the one kid down the street who always cheats at whatever game you're playing, you stop playing the game with him.
Yeah. Or cheat back!
Or you cheat yourself! Exactly, which is exactly what Padmavati is advocating.
My biggest question too, when he got kidnapped, was, his Ratan Singh and his people in a line of horses comes up to Arvind Kejriwal's tent, this massive tent he has. There's a sandstorm happening in the back of the tent, which covers their escape, I'm assuming, when he finally kidnaps him. Yeah. My thing would be, hey, I'm going to go in the tent. Can you guys just surround the tent? Just make sure no fuckery goes down while I'm in there.
This is technically my land.
Simple.
Just stand
on all sides of the tent, just in case. I'm just being cautious.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
The fact that Kijli invites him out, he's like, let me treat you to my hospitality. It's you alone in a tent. What the hell are you going to do? You got some Hot Pockets out there that you're going to heat up? This is BS. This is obviously a trap.
Okay, so to get serious and to come back to the climax, I have another question before we get to exactly what happens, which to me was really disturbing. Again, as a man, as a person, it was really kind of jarring because it felt abrupt. And this is kind of my other note for this movie. First of all, is there no, pre-18-year-old boys in this kingdom?
Yeah, I don't know where all the kids are and where all the old people are.
Yeah. We see some older women, but where are the young boys? Because I can't believe they were all in the army and they're all dead.
No, it's again goes to bad world building. It was
weird.
I think the thing that's so like frustrating about the end scene too, like it's the way it's depicted that he has to show it in this way where all these women are, there's a giant fire that they've set. They're marching resolutely in slow-mo forever, cutting back and forth with scenes of Kijli running towards his,
prize.
Running toward them. And they're just marching resolutely. The wind is blowing their hair and all that. And there's of course the disturbing shot of a pregnant woman next to a little girl.
Yeah, that's weird.
Because apparently all women, females have to die. And then it cuts as she steps up to the flames. Like, I'm gonna guess that death by fire really frickin' sucks.
Yeah.
And it would be super, super painful and scary. And I'm gonna guess not all of those women willingly went in. What about the other ones at the back who are like, oh, F this, I'm out. I'm gonna go take my chances.
Right.
And that's why it's just like so dumb that this is the first thing they think of. That it's not like, they come up with the throw the coals, but that's where like you wanted her to like have some attempt, even if she couldn't kill Kijli.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted her to fight him first, to just say, I'm gonna try and stop you from doing this to anyone else. I'm gonna hit you in your sword arm with an arrow so that you're never gonna be able to attack and hurt anyone again. And that they never have a conversation at all. Like the two of them never speak, never see each other, I don't think.
No.
And instead it's just like, nope, first line of defense is I'm gonna deny you all this. And that and that nobody else has a choice, and that the ending notes mention, oh, her sacrifice is, you know, remembered throughout history. Yeah, she got followed into the fire by a couple hundred other women. I guess they don't matter, because, you know, and that's where it becomes really hard to take, in that, and again, I don't know, other than me feeling the way I'm feeling about, you know, this just perpetuating this idea of women's bodies being their only valuable, the only thing valuable about them, that I don't know what other message to take away from that, especially the way it was shot, that it wasn't shown to be a horrifying act. It was courageous. Yeah. It's brave. And that's where it gets like, okay, am I supposed to, it's not like this is your only choice. It's the brave thing to do. Yeah. You're in danger. Better just kill yourself. This is not the way, you know, that's the way things probably would have played out back then. I get that. This movie isn't being made in the 15th century. This movie is being told now, and it's being, because I thought of other examples, like you said, like, you know, a lot of movies, you think of like The Post, a movie that's up for Oscar contention right now, you know, is about freedom of the press at a time when America has a president who is notably hostile toward freedom of the press. Like, it's made to appeal to that, you know, awaken that sense and be a contemporary, you know, comment on contemporary times in events that happened in the 1970s.
Or even go abstract with something like Get Out, which is like, how does this relate to today? Dig a little deeper, buddy.
And you think about, there's I was trying to think of all of, you know, there's stories throughout history that we don't even know because they've faded from relevance. I was thinking of there's a musical theater production called Showboat that is not really well known anymore. It's not performed a lot because a lot of, you know, the familiarity, at least in the U.S., with a lot of musical theater is that, you know, it's something, you know, what's the high school putting on,
right,
you know, or what's the local college putting on. People don't perform Showboat anymore because the main character beats up his wife. And we decided, they made a movie out of it, I think in the 50s, Shirley Jones is in it and Gordon McRae, but it doesn't get performed because we've decided this isn't the kind of behavior we want to condone. This isn't how we feel. And so, if we don't think that women should kill themselves to avoid rape, then why are we making this movie? Like, if we haven't decided that that's not something, you know, if the gang rape case and if all the other cases in India and the U.S. and the stuff that happens all the time now hasn't already convinced us that women deserve better, then what else is this movie about? So that's my complaint with it, and that's why I think it's not, I don't think this is going to be particularly well remembered, this movie. I don't think this is going to be one of Bhansali's greatest hits. I mean, it's going to make a ton of money. It's already made $3.5 million in the US and Canada. It had the single best day. But how much of that is driven by women like me who wanted to support them? When somebody said, you gotta, you know, we want to cut Deepika's nose off, I want to make sure that I go see that movie.
Exactly.
Because I don't want them to, you know, bullies to know that we capitulated to them. And then we get a movie like this and it's like, oh, well, that sucks. So it's
I mean, okay, so I have a lot of thoughts about this. And I mean, unfortunately, my frame of reference isn't as strong as yours in terms of what this means and what, honestly speaking, my first reaction was none of that, none of what you said. My first reaction was more of, is that it? Kind of a thing. I felt like the ending shot of her walking in and just, first of all, the lead up we got, like I said, infinite build ups is what this movie's all about.
Right.
The build up that we got to even her going into the fire was so long, and him running around was so long, it was kind of like, okay, like, can we move this on? When it finally happened, and you cut to black with text on the screen of, and she'll forever be remembered for her bravery.
Yeah.
It was just, and then a film director by some, and I'm like, is that it?
Yeah.
Because, like, this feels so, like, this didn't feel worth the buildup. So here's my thoughts on that particular ending, and again, I'm trying to keep my thoughts relegated to this movie itself, not trying to go beyond, because I'm not smart enough to make connections to like society or like you just did. My thing more is this, right? First of all, my theory, the question I was asking earlier, my theory of why is Ranveer Singh's character is so prominent. Why is his evilness getting such a spotlight throughout the whole film? My theory for that is, was the point of him being showcased as this evil, vile, repulsive person for majority of the movie, was the whole point that at the end, we're supposed to take, you know, Rani Padmavati sacrificing her, all her, you know, all the women in her kingdom and herself, were we supposed to take that as, you know, oh, it's not, you know, it's less about them, you know, preventing rape and killing themselves, more about, the focus should be more on, hey, remember this evil guy we've seen this whole movie, who's been getting everything he wants? He's getting screwed.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is, even if you take that perspective of going, screw you, you know, Alauddin Khilji, you just got, like, juked from what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
But the weird part is, the exclusive reaction to that is you're rooting for the women to die?
Yeah.
And kill themselves in the fire? Because that doesn't seem right, because that's weird.
You burn because
that's, you know, in his face kind of a thing.
Yeah, totally. Yes, see, exactly.
Because that's a lot of the reaction. That's a lot of ways people are defending that last scene, that this is less about them, you know, less about collective suicide and more an act of defiance against the bad guy, which I understand. I completely get that. But that's still problematic, because for us to root for that, you know, defiance against the bad guy, we have to be rooting for that act to be happening, which doesn't make it tragic, which doesn't make it sad, which undermines the entire reasoning behind why they're doing that, because it's not there.
Yeah.
Like, from my understanding of Johar, was it wasn't supposed to be, you know, our husband's died, okay, cool, guys, it's time for burning. Like, that to me wasn't the message. The message was, like, again, and this is me reading about it, right? This is me reading about this act. Again, like I said, Samarpita does a great job of summarizing what this is supposed to be. It's supposed to be, from what I read, this horrible, tragic sort of last resort, no option, paint yourself in a corner, you know, desperation move. That, hey, you know, brutal savages are at our gates. You know, I don't want to go through the humiliating, you know, more than, like, for some people, worse than death situation of being raped or whatever, especially in those times when honor and morality is so important that they kill themselves. To me, that seems like such a tragic and terrible thing to have to happen. And when I was reading about this, I never once questioned their motivations. I was never like, oh, bitches, come on, you gotta find some other options. No, to me, it's like, I get it. I understand why they felt like they need to resort to that. Now, having seen it visually, having seen all the lead up to it, there's a way, there's a universe, there's an alternate universe where you could make this movie and have that last scene, the build-up to that last scene, have the audience in tears.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that we see it coming. It's foreshadowed in the rest of the movie. It's something that's inevitable. And again, I go back to Troy, because the character of Achilles in Troy, in mythology, dies in this story. We all know it. We all see it coming. And throughout the movie, there's so many references to that. There's so many foreshadowing of the fact that your battle at Troy is what kills you. You will die. You will forever be remembered, but you will die. And the fact that, despite the predictions, he goes to fight in Troy. His arrogance and his hubris takes him into that journey, while he knows what that journey holds at the end, is the tragedy of that character and his story arc in Troy. Mm-hmm. We don't have that in Padmavat. There is no foreshadowing. There is no looming inevitability of this situation happening, even though it's historical. So there is a way to make this movie where the last scene, I'm in tears. I'm bawling at, oh my God. And like you said, in terms of, you know, graphic content, show us. Show us the horrible nature of living human beings walking into fire, screaming, burning, like in hordes. There is a way to do this movie where at the end of it, you are shocked and horrified and revolted at this act. And you're still honoring this character because, oh my God, she had no choice. And she subjected herself to something worse than death to avoid something she considered worse than death. But this movie is now made that way. It's made, there's one, right before she goes in the fire, there's an older character that comes up and she goes, Jai Bhavani. Like, she like literally fist pumps in the air that we're going to do this, which, I mean, it, and again, and I'm not even speaking to the cultural ramifications of that scene. I'm just talking about in the story itself. It had no effect on me.
And I think, give yourself more credit because you are making a really strong social point. And that is, yeah, that it's that this should have been shown as something that's horrible, because it would have been horrible. And we all, you know, the women at the time would have found it horrible. We should find it horrible. And like you said, it had to be that inevitable, like that moment of last resort. And that isn't the way he depicts it. And so it's depicted as honorable and noble. And that's wherein the problem is. And that's where it feels out of step with contemporary times. And it should feel out of step with contemporary times. We don't think that anymore, by and large. You know, the groups of people who do think, yes, it's honorable for women to kill themselves, like, we find them kind of repulsive and out of step. Generally speaking.
See,
and so,
but there's still ways to do it though. I mean, like,
yeah,
I understand the argument of people saying, well, you're seeing it as a person living in today, them living in that time won't think of it that way. I'm like, that's not necessarily true, because again, we have a lot of stories where people in certain times, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the day, we're still people. It's still humans. No one, regardless of what era you're brought in, like, for example, again, and I go back to Troy, where, you know, kings are dishonored. You know, Paris' son yeah. takes a step that completely ruins, risks an entire kingdom. But he even says at the end, he's like, hey, I'll run away. Or let's both yeah. of us run away. Like, he has options that totally defy the time period, totally defy his yeah. upbringing as a prince, totally mm-hmm. defy the moral constructs that he's been raised with. But, and again, I'm not saying he follows through, but it's a discussion. He brings it
yeah.
up. This movie had so many opportunities to do that. There's a scene where right before Ratan Singh goes into war, Padmavati asks him that, hey, I mm-hmm. asked your permission to do Johar. And
yeah.
his silence is his affirmation. But if that was a scene where he said something like, you know, I don't want your death to be upon my head, or something where it's
yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
you know, or even if you, I mean, this might sound horrible to say, even if you romanticized it, whereas even if yeah. she said something like, you know, if you die, I don't
yeah.
want to live in this world without you. Or some
yeah,
bullshit
yeah.
where you at least romanticize her dying
right.
that has less to do with honor and rape prevention and more to do with the fact that, you know, all our men are dead, all our husbands are dead, we don't want to live in a world where
right.
they don't... Like, even if you had something like that, I think it would still convey the tragedy of this
right.
act instead of... Well, yeah, well, if I fail, obviously you're going to kill yourself. Like, of course you have my...
Yeah.
Like, it just seems weird that as a husband, as a lover, the thought of your wife dying isn't something that emotionally affects you, that you have a reaction other than, yeah.
We're acting as though people in those times didn't have similar emotions to what we have
exactly.
now. That he wouldn't be crushed at the thought that of you know, her dying,
right.
that she wouldn't be scared of dying, that all the other women who are being forced into this by their princesses dictate, that they wouldn't be scared. You know, it changes if that little girl marching into the fire is crying, doesn't it?
And that's what I'm trying to say, right?
I'm
not trying to say
yeah.
change the ending. I'm not trying to say
no.
don't do this movie. Like, my thing isn't like, you made the movie, sure, make the movie. But there's a way to tell this story that conveys
mm-hmm.
that this is a horrible thing to be happening to these women. The fact that they're willingly doing it makes it even worse of an option that they
mm-hmm.
feel the need to do this. There's many ways to do this where it doesn't come off like the problems people have with it, and I completely understand it. There's a way to make this movie that you don't have those problems where,
mm-hmm.
and again, you don't change the ending. I'm not saying the ending
right.
works exactly the way it works right now, but there's little tweaks you could have done to convey that, oh my God, this is sad. Like, I'm sad at the end of this movie. I'm not disturbed. I'm not confused.
Yeah.
I'm not baffled at what the hell is happening.
Yeah.
You know, why is that lady so fucking proud that they're going to
yeah.
die together? Like, this is weird.
It's
yeah.
it's the unfortunate effect of all of it. And I know a lot of people, you know, I'm a bigger Bhansali fan generally than a lot of people, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it changes the way I think about him. And his motivations in storytelling, and how, you know, so it's that's the sad
that's
thing
fair.
Going forward.
That's
so
fair. I still stand by the fact that I am sure the extenuating circumstances of this movie, both off screen, on screen, and every which way.
Mm-hmm.
I always understand. Like, I always try to see things from the filmmaker's perspective. When a filmmaker has to come out and plead to certain groups of the public to let friggin' people like. I think it's really sad. And whatever mistake Bhansali made in this movie, I really see that as a result of that duress that he was under. I'm not gonna, like, I think I think everyone gets a bad movie. This is coming from a guy.
He already had Saria.
Well, this is coming from a guy who, while I'm rethinking it now, I'm still temporarily a fan of Ram Gopal Varma. So I think everyone gets one. I think this is his one. And again, given all the back and forth with this movie, I don't think I would hold it against him. At the same time, this is a messed up movie. I didn't like it, Kathy. I think it's safe to say you didn't like it. It is in theaters right now, so I mean, if you disagree with our thoughts, or you know, do let us know on social media. Watch the movie for yourself if you haven't already seen it. Make up your own mind. Don't go based on us. I always try to point out that just because we didn't like it doesn't mean we're saying no one else should watch it. Watch it yourself. Make up your own mind.
Although I will make a point, a little brief side note. If you're gonna be sure, if you do disagree, that especially when directing something at me or to any other woman who's complaining, don't tell me that I don't have a right to my opinion. You don't have to listen to it. I'm not telling you have to listen to it. You don't have to agree. I'm fine if anybody likes this movie. I don't care. I'm not telling you not to. I'm saying what my problems are. And a lot of women are feeling like, this is a good time to listen to women right now and to not tell them to just shut up and go away.
Well,
so,
and that's
fair warning.
And that's what I'm saying. And that's what I'm saying, that I feel like, I mean, our Badrinath episode got a lot of play. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people took that very negatively. That's why I'm saying that, you know what, like, this is our opinion. This is what we thought. And again, we're not condemning this movie. We're not boycotting this movie, because that would be ironic given what happened with this movie before. Definitely watch it for yourself. Make up your own mind. Take a look. We're not critics. Kathy is a critic. I am not a critic. My thoughts.
Oh, please, you're a critic. also, give us. You can talk to us too on social media if you agree with us. That's nice too.
That's nice too. Please, yeah. But yeah, definitely check it out for yourself. And you know, like let us know what you think, because I think there's valid points to be made on, you know, I don't want to say both sides, because that, I think that phrase has been corrupted by someone specific, but there are valid arguments from every perspective. But yeah, definitely let us know what you thought of this. Kathy, I do want to ask you one last question. I know everyone's kind of going nuts over, Deepika Padukone's unibrow in the movie. I know that got a lot of play in the beginning. Is it surprising to you that Shahid Kapoor's massive, lustrous hair hasn't been the aim of any sort of marketing appeal or no good buzz around that? Because I was hypnotized with his mane of.
That is a massive bouffant. Jim Sarve and his perm. I mean, this is like, there's some big man hair going on
in
this movie.
I'm telling you, this is like, I was... Like every, like those first couple of scenes, I'm just looking at this and I'm like, is that, what is he using? Like, and again, guys, Bollywood gossip people, is there like hairstyle tips for like how you get your hair to look like Shahid Kapoor's in Padmavati? What products did he use? Is there like style guides like that? Let me know. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Spiskin Podcast. Kathy, thank you so much for being here. You can find both mine and Kathy reviews online. Kathy, let people know where they can get a hold of your review of Padmavati.
You can find my reviews. I'm sorry, I'm just thinking about you with Shahid's hair from the movie, and it would be a heck of a look for you, I gotta admit. So you can find my reviews at accessbollywood.com, and I am on Twitter at Kathy F. Gibson.
Perfect. Once again, Kathy, thank you so much for being here. In closing, I do gotta say, if you didn't like Padmavat, definitely check out Troy, or to a lesser degree, Jodha Akbar, because I feel like you get that fix of period drama from either of those films. Please subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and any other podcasting app. Feel free to visit my website, blankpagebeatdown.com, to listen directly from the browser if you don't have any sort of mobile device. If you like what you heard today, please leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find the show. And placates my insecurity about this show and, you know, life in general. Follow the podcast on Twitter at splitscreen_pod. Follow me personally on Twitter at TheShahShahid, which is also the best place to get in touch with me with any feedback. Like I said, hate about Padmavat, feedback about Padmavat. Good job, Shah. Any of those, you can get in touch with me. And again, thank you so much for listening, and we should be back pretty soon with a couple of other episodes. Thank you so much.